If you have a Bible or maybe a way to access your Bible today, we're going to be in John chapter 6, verse 16. We're going to read those verses in just a moment. You know, we've been working through the Gospel of John, and this part of it we've called, I Need a Miracle. We've been looking at some of the great miracles that Jesus performs in this Gospel, and you know, one of the things that's very interesting about the miracles is that they're generated by some kind of need. The first miracle Jesus does in the Gospel of John is he turns water into wine to avoid a kind of social faux pas so that the people living there, hosting the wedding, aren't embarrassed by not having a show of hospitality. Later on, Jesus will heal a royal official's son who, if he doesn't heal him, the boy's going to die. Later on, he does a miracle of a paralytic. And then last week, we looked at the miracle where he fed the multitudes bread in a multiplication miracle. Well, today, we're in John chapter 6, and Jesus is away from his disciples. They're out on the Sea of Galilee. And they're going to be captured in the midst of a storm. It's as if they're sort of looking up to heaven going, okay, God, I need a miracle. We're calling our message this morning, How to Survive a Storm. It's one of the most familiar stories in the Bible because it includes that moment when Jesus goes walking out on the water. John chapter 6 tells this story in verse 16. When evening came, his disciples went down to the lake where they got into a boat and they set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now, it was dark. John's like a good storyteller. He's setting the mood for us. We're out on the lake. It's dark. And Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing and the waters grew rough. Anybody that's ever been in a boat in a storm knows the feeling of the disciples at this moment. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water. At first we think, well, they're going to be excited because they see Jesus. But the text tells us they were frightened. They didn't know exactly what it was, what was going on. But he said to them, so they heard his voice, it is I, don't be afraid. Literally, it is I am. Then it says here in verse 21, they were willing to take him into the boat. And immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. And then we're told about what happens the next day. The next day, the crowd that had stayed on the opposite shore of the lake realized that only one boat had been there and Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but they had gone away alone. Then some boats from Tiberias landed near the place where the people had been eating the bread after the Lord had given thanks. And once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor the disciples were there, they realized, nobody's here. What are we doing here? They got into a boat and they went to Capernaum in search of Jesus. Sooner or later in our lives, all of us are going to face a moment like this. Maybe we're not in a boat. Maybe we're not in the middle of a lake. But we may be in a storm. Maybe this morning you're experiencing one of the storms of life and you wonder, how do you survive in a storm? Well, it's not very often that I could tell you that the disciples are good examples for us. But today, we see some good examples. Number one, how to survive a storm. Don't panic. That's the first thing to do. Don't panic when you're in a storm. You know, here they are out there in the middle of the sea, and all of a sudden they see all these things happening. The first reaction anybody would have is, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? We're going to die. But that's not what you should do. I had a friend in Waco, when he was working up at the church one day, a man came up from behind him and pointed a gun at him and asked him for all of his money. And, you know, he wasn't really thinking. He just turned around, and what he'd often say when something happened, he just said it came right out of his mouth. He said, oh, shoot. Well, that's not what you should say when someone's pointing a gun at you. That's the wrong thing to say, right? It's kind of like the bank robber that got a little confused because he was a little nervous, and he walked into the bank, and he said, he meant to say, don't mess with me. This is a stick-up. But he got confused, and he said, don't stick with me. This is a mess-up. Well, you know, fear does that kind of thing to us. Zig Ziglar, the famous quipper, the guy that made all those interesting quips, once said that fear is like an acrostic, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. One of the things that fear does is it sort of distorts reality for us. And, you know, when you're afraid, you're not really seeing things the way they really are. You're seeing them the way fear distorts them. An example of this is one of America's most famous stagecoach robbers, a man by the name of Black Bart, who there were these wanted signs all over the place for, saying, you know, we'll give you money if you'll help us find him, dead or alive. The reason Black Bart was so famous was because between North Carolina and south part of Oregon, from the 1870s to the 1880s, he held up 29 stagecoaches. But what's amazing is that he never fired a shot, he never took a hostage, he always wore a mask. How did he do that? How was he so successful? The historian gives the explanation. He says, Black Bart used fear to paralyze his victims. His sinister presence was enough to overwhelm the toughest stagecoach guard. In other words, he'd just show up and people and he'd say, hey, I'm Black Bart. And people say, well, here, take the money. We're just so scared of you. The fear brought out the worst in them. It paralyzed them. As we look at the story in the Bible, I think we learn some things for ourselves about how to survive a storm. Don't panic, number one, even if it's dark. Even if it's dark. I think probably the first fears that we ever get in life are the fear of being alone and the fear of being in the dark, right? I mean, that's just the first fear. It's why I wonder why we tell kids the story of Daniel in the lion's den. You remember that story in the Old Testament? If you really think about the story about Daniel spending a night in the lion's den, that's got to be one of the scariest stories there is in the whole Bible. I mean, can you imagine? You're spending a night in the lion's den. And as far as we know, Daniel didn't have any light on. And you're in there in the lion's den. It's the middle of the night. You can't see anything. But you can hear something. You can hear those lions talking. Right? You can hear your heart beating. I mean, that's really a scary story. And, you know, as children, I mean, I know with our kids, just being in the dark, being alone, that's one of the scariest things. I heard about a little five-year-old that was helping mom cook dinner, and mom said, go get some tomato soup out of the pantry. And the little boy was scared of the pantry because it was dark and he had to go alone. And she said, don't worry, Jesus will be in there with you. Little boy walks over to the pantry, kind of scared, opens the door, looks in there and says, Jesus, if you're in there, would you hand me a can of tomato soup, you know? That's how we sometimes approach our fears, isn't it? And we laugh at these stories, but the truth is, I mean, if we're just really honest with ourselves, we face fears in life. There are moments when we are just scared to death. And we're in the dark. It may not even be just the dark that we're scared of, but we're scared, stuck there like the disciples in the middle of the lake, wondering what to do. But not only even if it's dark, but look again here, even if the wind is against you. I mean, the wind was moving the waves. The wind was doing all of this. They couldn't put up the sails because the wind was blowing. In life, sometimes we have to go through a little wind, W-I-N-D, to get a win, W-I-N. I was reading about this lady in Dallas from maybe like mid-1900s. She had one of those jobs as a bank secretary when they used to type things on a typewriter. Anybody remember electronic typewriters? I had to take typing class. I think I'm the last one that ever had to take typing in school because now they have these things called computers and you can just hit back, you know, and erase your mistakes. But in those days, if you're typing, you make a mistake, you know, you got to start all over again. And this lady working at a Dallas bank, she was a painter and she just kind of gotten the idea in her mind, you know what I want to do is I want to take some of that paint that I use and just apply it to the little mistakes that I made. And everybody thought this was a great idea. Everybody in the bank wanted to do it. Everybody she met wanted some of that. And they encouraged her to go to the businesses to see if somebody would take it as a business and sell it. Nobody wanted it. Even IBM didn't want her idea of whiteout. So she went to her kitchen, not letting the winds stop her. She went into her kitchen and she started making the stuff. And she started selling it. And pretty soon, she had a $38 million a year business that she sold for $50 million. It's an incredible story. Sometimes you have to go through some wins, W-I-N-D-S, to get a win, W-I-N. Even if it's dark, even if the wind is against you, but here's the other thing, even if the waves are getting rough, the water against the boat made it a little bit difficult. What we do when we face storms of life is we say, God, take this storm away. But sometimes the Lord does not calm the storm. Sometimes he lets the storm rage and he calms you. Sometimes he says, you know what? I'm not going to take these circumstances. We're in a tough time. I'm not going to remove that. I'm just going to make you have peace to go through what you're going through. So number one, don't panic. Number two, what do you do? How do you survive a storm? Just keep going. That's what's so interesting in the story about the disciples is they're stuck in the middle of the boat. The wind is coming. The waves are everything's happening, but they don't stop. They were experienced fishermen. They just kept going. We've seen these Jesus boats. You know, you've seen what they look like. They've got the rows. They've got the sails. And as they were working their way across the Sea of Galilee, I want you to think about these three things. Just keep going. Number one, when the sailing is not smooth. When the sailing is not smooth. In fact, if they had put up the sail in the middle of the boat, in the middle of the lake, it would have taken them in the wrong direction or it would have been destroyed. Keep sailing when the sailing is not smooth. When the rowing is by hand. You know, I don't know about you, but I read that part of the story and I'm kind of like, if you gave me rows on a big boat like that, I don't know if I could have made it 100 feet, much less 3 to 4 miles. But they just kept going and going. In fact, we have a saying, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Keep going when the going is tough. It was Thomas Edison who said that our greatest weakness lies in giving up. It was Edison who said, I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work. It was Edison who said, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. My favorite Edison quote, though, is, opportunity is missed by most people because it's dressed in overalls and it looks like work. The biblical word for that is perseverance. Spurgeon said, perseverance is what got the snail to the ark. The book of James says it like this, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. Probably the most important verse, though, on perseverance in the Bible is Romans 5, 3, and 4. It's the verse where the Apostle Paul says, not only so, but we glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character. And character produces hope. When you're stuck in a storm in the middle of the sea, what do? You don't panic. You keep going. But that's not all. I mean, I guess they could have just kept on going and going and going all night, and maybe the waves got worse, the wind got worse, and they drowned, and it was over. It was it. There's one more part of the story that's so important, isn't it? It's when they look up and they see Jesus, and he's walking on water, and they don't really recognize him. And then they hear his voice, and he says, I am. It is I. And then the text makes this very strange statement. It says in verse 20, then they were willing to let Jesus get on board. If you want to survive the storm, the last thing you got to do, bring Jesus on board. You know, if you took that phrase, I am, in the Bible, a lot of you know that that's the name of God revealed to Moses at the burning bush. In the Bible, again and again, we're told that the I am, the great I am, is the one and the only one who walks on the waters. Job chapter 9, verse 8, Psalm chapter 72, verse 20. Here is Jesus walking on the water. But here's the deal. They could have missed him. They could have missed him. They could have missed Jesus that day. They could have missed their moment to be saved by Jesus. And so can you and me. How could the disciples have missed him? Well, same way we can miss him. Number one, by trusting in what they saw with their eyes. You know, if they would have just trusted in what they saw and they looked out and they saw this guy walking on the water, their first reaction was to be afraid. Their first reaction was not, hey, look, it's Jesus, come on board. Their first reaction was to be afraid. And Mark's gospel tells us why. Mark 6:49, it says when they looked, they saw him walking on the lake, and they thought he was a ghost, and they cried out. When they first looked, they they were afraid because they thought he was a ghost. Now, that doesn't just mean that they were scared of ghosts, a good ghost story. It was actually because of a legend that fishermen knew very well, that the legend was you saw a ghost that was a bad omen and you were going to drown. And they didn't think they were going to make it. But they didn't trust in what they saw. They trusted in what they heard. They heard his voice and they said, come on, get on board. But you and I can miss him if we trust what we see also by giving in to their fears. You know, our fears, I told you before, that they'll just play tricks on us and they'll tell us things that aren't true. They'll lie to us. Fears can't be trusted in our life. I don't know why, but the folks over there in China decided to build a bridge. We all know they've built walls, but they also built a bridge, a very famous bridge that's 1,410 feet across. It's a long bridge. It's 20 feet wide. That's not very big. And it is 1,000 feet above the ground. That's pretty high. The interesting thing about the bridge, it is completely clear. So that's about a third of a mile. You're going to walk across a bridge, looking straight through the bridge to 1,000 feet below you. Sounds a lot of fun. In fact, what I want you to do this afternoon is Google videos of people walking across this bridge. Grown men groveling on the ground, crying as they're trying to get across this bridge because they're scared to death. One of the videos I saw was a man and his wife was pulling him across. You can do it, honey. The fear is just paralyzing. That's what fear does to us. I mean, it's incredible. And there's a story in the Bible about that. Remember when Israel was about to go into the promised land? And what they said was, no, we shouldn't go into the promised land. They brought back a report. They said, because there's giants there. Now, the truth is maybe there was a couple of them, but they said everybody was. Numbers 13:33, we saw the Nephilim there, and we seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes. I mean, these guys were so big, and we were so small. Of course, that wasn't true. It was their fear talking. Their fear had made their problems bigger than what they really were. And the sad tragedy of the Old Testament story is those people listened to their fears. How can you miss Jesus? You can trust in what you see, give in to your fears. But here's the third thing, by not letting Jesus in. I mean, Jesus is just walking around the boat. He's just out strolling on the water. But the text says that the disciples had to be willing to let him get on board. Isn't that a truth about our lives? As we face the storms of life, it's not whether or not Jesus really is or God really is. The question is are you willing to let him in to the storm you're going through? Are you willing to let the great I Am walk with you through what you're going through? This story is really a great story about so many things, but it's one of the lessons is a story about perseverance. One of the most famous female swimmers in American history is a woman by the name of Florence Chadwick. She's famous because she was the first woman to swim across the English Channel in both directions. Now, I mean, that's a pretty big deal just to swim across one way, but to do both. But she's really famous not because of her success, but because of her failure. On July 4th of 1951, she set out on a much easier swim off the coast of Southern California. It would be a swim that she would not succeed. The challenge that she faced that day, though, was not a greater distance. It wasn't even the bone-chilling waters of the Pacific, but a dense fog had come in, and she couldn't see the land. And as she swam for 15 hours in that bone-chilling water, within a half a mile of her goal, she gave up. She told reporters, if I could have seen the land, I might have made it. I love that story because it's a great example of failure. It's also true because it's a story of the disciples. But it's also a story that has another chapter. As Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. Because this lady, Florence Chadwick, would try it again for the second time. And this time, despite fog moving in, she would succeed. She said she had convinced herself that even though she wouldn't be able to see the land, she would just keep on swimming. And she did. In fact, she not only broke the women's record, she broke the men's record by 2 hours. Her story is not just a story of failure. It's an incredible story of endurance, perseverance, not believing in what she could see, but believing in what she believed. Now, I know our graduates have heard me say this in the early service, so if you haven't heard me say this, here's like a take-home lesson from this message today. If you follow Jesus, there will be storms. You believe that today? If you follow Jesus in this life, there's going to be storms. But Jesus never denied the reality of the storm. And if they were willing to see it, the purpose of this storm was a sign so that they could see who he really was and invite Jesus to get on board.